as you're listening to tonight's recap of the Big Brother 19 recap, you could do us a big favor by filling out a survey that was put out by our podcast network, Podcast One, over at podcastone.com/mysurvey. What it does is gives the network a little bit more information about the fine people that listen to the show to help match our show up with potential advertisers even better than Christmas being a match with Paul in the Big Brother house. So if you want to fill out that survey, it takes a few minutes. You can go to podcastone.com/mysurvey. Enjoy the show. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who's breaking out the surf and turf and calamari for the final live show of the season for me. I am Rob Cisternino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Friday Night. It's a recap of the recap once again. And a lot to get to here tonight on a surprisingly new footage stocked recap of the recap, and a lot of stuff to talk about here as we head into the final days of the Big Brother 19 season. Special guest with us here tonight, a man who has gotten to at least have a chat relationship with a couple of the players out the door this week. Here is Magic Mike Bloom. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing well, but I'm actually not alone, Rob. I have special intel. I am joined by the winner of Big Brother 21 right here. Give it up to the winner of Big Brother 21.
It's
in the stars. It's going to happen.
A shoe
versus Alex is happening. Confirmed.
A shoe will be able to beat you.
Is Alex's master plan to lose this season and come back and win another season? Little did she know the shoe would be playing in season 21.
Yes, the shoe is going to come back. Would you rather face a giant shoe, or would you rather keep your relationship with shoes the same and leave that alone at the shoe store? Taryn, could you daily update a season of Alex versus the shoe season?
I think we would need Nicole to come on and help out with that season. She loves shoes so much.
Nicole's going to create a whole stand account for
Nicole,
the shoe.
Not the, oh my God, it's the shoe. The giant shoe versus...
This is a perfect mapping out, though, because the shoe's going to win season 21. Season 22 is going to come around. We get our mid-season recap. Ding dong. Who's at the door? Open it up. It's the shoe. It's there to remember all the great memories that you had in the first 6 weeks of the season. Just the shoe sitting on the counter. Talking about old times.
Me and Paul are running this house, and I can't believe that the shoe thinks that they're going to step to me. He's not my ride or die.
Okay.
Dominique says, there is a sneaker in the house. I know it. It is sneaking around with its tongue moving around. That's how a sneaker moves.
That He's shoe is so shady.
Yeah. There's a lot of shoe tendencies happening in this house with its tongue. Okay. So, all right. A lot of stuff to get to. Hashtag RHAP. We will take your questions here tonight. Anything you want to talk about from the recap of the recap, or anything that may have been going on in the live feeds later on in this show. I mentioned my last live show of the season. This is the last Big Brother episode until we got to, did I hear that right, Taryn? A 2-hour finale?
Yeah, that's the word. 2 hours.
Well, yeah. When you have so much, what a competitive final three we have. Why not throw the kitchen sink out there in the finale?
Well, maybe this is why Survivor was not premiering on the same night. They planned from the beginning to have a 2-hour finale. And then as the season progressed, they were like, oh, no, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
This finale is going to throw out the kitchen sink, the milk, the cinnamon, the hair extensions, everything.
The rat traps are going to have it all there for the Big Brother 19 finale, the 2-hour jam-packed finale. I will be there and I will have interviews with the cast of Big Brother 19 that all of your favorites will be there, including me. And so we will talk to them all in the Big Brother backyard. We'll get video and audio of everything that goes on in the backyard that night. So really looking forward to that. And something that we're trying out this season. I know that you guys have a lot of questions, feel like there's a lot of unanswered things that we don't know about the players and what in the hell they were thinking this season. So we are opening this up to you guys. You can send us in your questions, bbfinale@robhasawebsite.com. We are going through everything you're sending in. Word on the street is that we are pretty light on pre-jury people questions. Last year, I talked to every single house guest. So for your people that are not in the jury, you know, we have not gotten as many questions. And I guess that's because people don't have as much to be mad about with those people. But send us your pre-jury questions in as well. And we will do our best with the allotted time that we have on Finale Night. All right. Yeah. So let's get into this. Taryn, in your mind, what was the thing that you were most surprised to see in this episode?
Cameron in the diary room.
Yeah, we did see Cameron, but just for the record, Megan has been completely retconned from this season, and Jillian is not far behind her.
We saw her briefly when they introduced the Den of Temptation and made us really remember almost 3 months ago, but I wonder if we caught Cameron also, like, mid-strip routine, because he's sitting there shirtless saying, like, I can't believe I'm going to be the first person to cry on the season. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, and Joe Borchacho tweeted at us saying, why was Cameron naked in the DR? When did he have time to take his clothes off? I think the problem was he didn't have time to put his clothes back on after the strip routine.
He stripped, had to go to the diary room, and then by the time it was time for him to go. Yeah. Mike, do you suspect that Megan will be at the finale?
No. I mean, I'm trying to remember... it wasn't an expulsion, but I mean, like, we didn't have, like, Chima at the Big Brother 11 finale. Again, very different circumstances, but we didn't have, I don't think we had Evil Dick. Did we have Evil Dick at the Big Brother 13 finale? I can't even remember. I think it's just generally, if you leave the house through means other than being evicted, or in Cameron's case, through a variety of extreme circumstances, your invite is in the mail.
Okay, so if we're not in the mail in this case.
Yeah, exactly.
So, don't expect Megan at the finale. And Taryn, we barely ever... The only thing they ever show about Jillian is that she was in the tattoo contest.
Yeah, that pretty much. I mean, I'm glad, you know? Cameron rightfully got, 15th, 14th place with the battle back. So, there you go.
Yeah. I also think that... Cameron has gotten a little bit of the robbed G.odd of the season, in that I think that, as you've said a couple of times, Taryn, that, boy, if Paul wasn't in the house, who knows what Cameron could have done. He has gotten sort of the... Well, if it wasn't for Paul, he probably would have gone very far into the game when, you know, for all intents and purposes, he might have been out the first week anyway.
Well, think of it this way. Cameron was my initial pick to win the game in my draft, and then he was swapped with Paul, who is now going to win. So clearly, since I have to win all drafts, if Cameron had been not swapped with Paul, he would have won.
Yeah.
Yes, it's the sliding backyard doors of the Big Brother draft.
Certainly. Okay, so let's just set this up, and then we can go through the segments, and if there's nothing there, we don't have to spend a lot of time on it. So in the recap of the recap, I know a lot of people probably didn't even watch the episode. We started off with the final three sitting down with Surf and Turf and Calamari. Mike, was this an impressive spread for the final three?
Well, I'm wondering if the Surf and Turf meal was from Outback Steakhouse. It looked very similar. Mm-hmm. I worked at an Outback Steakhouse for about 9 months 5 years ago, so I know the cuisine very well. Calamari, not necessarily on the menu. I don't know what Sir Squiddington had to do to wind up on the plate of the final three in the Big Brother 19 house, but he's taken a far fall from when we saw him last fall.
This is a damn good steak. This thing is cooked to perfection, and I'm all about it because these biceps ain't gonna feed themselves, so your boy needs his meat.
Yeah, all right. So, boys, your boys need the meat.
Poor Christmas.
This is boys. This is all boys. All right. So the reminiscing really begins with talk about Josh winning the 25K. This was a fight that we saw parts of on the live feed. Taryn, was this fight between Kevin tells Matt about the 25K and then ultimately Matt tells everybody? Was there anything that we learned in the episode that we didn't know from the feeds?
Yeah, this was actually, this entire thing was cut from the feeds. We basically saw Kevin question Matt as he walked by. They started to get into it. Feeds cut for about 2 hours, and then they came back with Kevin complaining about Alex calling him old and saying mean things to him, and Alex complaining that Kevin was old and saying mean things to her. So we never actually saw this fight. According to Kevin, there were some much more personal attacks thrown than we were shown. But new stuff for us.
You know, there's always a lot of talk in the house this summer about Kevin is shady. And I guess if you were looking at it from their perspective, not a great look on Kevin here with one deciding to tell Matt what was going on and then his lies to cover it up, Mike.
Yeah, it's interesting. My interview with Kevin hasn't been released yet, but I asked him about the fibbings that he did at the very beginning of the game, because not only did he have this $25,000 thing, but there were the Hinky votes. Outside of the stuff he was trying to blame on Ramsey, I know he was trying to play both sides and spinning a lot, but like he said tonight to Matt, Kevin is adamant that this is the only lie he told in the game. I'm not sure if he defines what a lie is differently. Maybe the Knights of Columbus define lies in a different way, or if he just doesn't remember what happened 70 days ago. But I find it really interesting that, you know, he thinks this is the only time he's really lied about something, and then he lies further to cover it up, almost immediately saying like, "Oh no, I didn't say that at all. Matt's completely lying to you."
I like how even this was a sort of mafia response from Kevin. Just immediately when he's talking to Matt, he's like, why would you make something up about me? You could have said anything. You could have lied and said anything. And Matt's like, yeah, I could have. And he's like, so why did you lie?
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Here's a little bit of that Kevin and Matt conversation.
You wouldn't be telling no one anything I had said to you, would you?
I mean, if I did, that's my business.
Well, you told me it was between me and you, man.
Kevin, in this game, I can tell anybody anything I want.
You can make it up, too.
I could, yeah. So you
made- huh, I could. Huh, a good homie.
Yes. About time it out 12 seconds before Matt took a big heaping of castrati O's, his favorite cereal, and started going into the falsetto.
Now, Mike, go back to your Kevin interview. Is it embargoed or you haven't been able to post it yet?
It's just waiting on some editing before it gets posted. But so a little bit of a teaser. We talked about that. He gave me some nice more beauty tips involving olive oil. I talked a little bit about how you mentioned the personal attacks, about how you compartmentalize that type of stuff. It's a good interview. I'm excited for people to check it out.
Okay.
You got me invited to Thanksgiving, right, Mike?
Oh yeah, that was the Phantom Six question. As I got a plus six to take to Thanksgiving dinner, so I figured I'd bring the whole crew.
Yeah. What about Kevin's overall tone? Did he seem the same as from when he was with Julie, or did he seem like there was a little bit more of an edge to him?
No, he seemed, again, very gracious. I mean, this is also someone who, remember, when he was up against the block with Jason a few weeks ago, he was very resigned to going home. And it seemed like he sort of has held on to that mentality, despite the fact that Paul has kind of been stringing him along for the better part of a month. I did ask him if, in spite of Christmas's speech to him, if he felt like he really could win at the end. And he was very adamant that he was able to. And he was very firm that Christmas's statement to him was only a ruse to everyone else. That, you know, it really wasn't an insult that he couldn't win competitions. He knew that the social game, which was very important, was what would get him there in the end and would ultimately get him the win.
Right. And I forgot to set this up at the top of the show. Of course, Mike Bloom has been doing exit interviews with all of the Big Brother contestants as they come out of the game for Parade.com this season, and be sure to look out for his stuff with the finalists and ultimately the winner coming up later on this week, in addition to coverage of Survivor 35 for Parade.com. Mike, what about your interview earlier this week with Alex? It was something that had gotten a little bit of buzz based on the fact that she was still adamant about Kevin was a shady guy.
Yeah, as I look this up, the Alex interview was super interesting because, like you sort of talked about with your own backyard interviews, it's interesting to sort of take a look at somebody like Alex who has a different perception, I would say, than the way us objectively observing people might be seeing the way things go. So it's always interesting to get the perspective of someone who's trying to take things in as they see them. So I asked Alex, you never seem like someone to shy away from conflict. As of late, you instigated fights with Mark, and you made several personal attacks against Kevin. Why did you clash with these people who were right about to go into the jury house? And she said, that's one thing I learned from Jason. Get behind my decision and take it as they come. Kevin antagonized me all season, tried to belittle me, provoked me, and was constantly trying to start fights with me. He also tried to turn Jason on me, and I don't appreciate it. And then she goes on to say that she decided to fight with Mark for fun and chaos, because cat ears and coke and all that stuff, it's funny, is essentially what she said.
Yeah, she did it for the lulz, Taryn.
Yeah, I also like the very long preamble to basically say, Alex is delusional.
Oh, yeah. Boy. The thing about Alex that I totally realized over these past few weeks is Alex is like an amalgam of every character from a Disney Channel show, especially in the diary room, where like she's like energetic and she's got that like really weird delivery of like, oh, I can't believe I got to tout around these wieners for the entire week. Oh, man.
Are you telling me that I need to go around the house and carry all these wieners?
Oh, I got detention. Oh, but that's the night of the big bowling party.
So we end up seeing that whole fight play out, and then we go back to the final three, who sets up another Jess and Cody package. Josh is saying that he doesn't think that Jess and Cody are real. Taryn, what would give him that impression?
I think it's just, if we remember back to when Cody ate some of Alex's HOH cereal, they believed that everything he was saying was a lie, and that he didn't have a daughter, he didn't really care about Jessica, and I think that feeling has stuck with them, and so Josh is like, it's all fake.
It's all fake. It's all fake. And so we got to see that if you were a Cody for AFP person, you had to be pleased with what you saw tonight here, Mike.
I don't know, because the Kevin for AFP people, I feel like they got a lot more. You know, they got the real surf and turf meal, whereas the Cody for AFP people got a nice portion, but it was more so the pepper jack cheese that was sprinkled along the floor leading to the big pot.
Taryn, if you were going to be handicapping this, and I know that you're monitoring this closely with your poll, how do you think the AFP battle shifted tonight?
I think this was definitely in Kevin's favor. In my polls currently, Cody is leading it, with Kevin not too far behind in second place. But I do think, certainly Cody got a great edit with the daughter admission to Jessica, the lovey-dovey stuff. But we did see a lot more of Kevin. And then especially with the fact that we got Kevin's story about losing his house, wanting to provide for his children, he got a lot further in the season. He's always been a lovable character. This reminds me a lot of when it seemed like it might be close between Johnny Mac and James in season 17, and then James just got loaded in this episode with like package after package, and it was like, well, they clearly are favoring James. I think they were favoring Kevin here.
Okay, we'll see. That's the maybe the more dramatic battle heading into Wednesday night. We got to see something else that I know we've talked about quite a bit on the podcast, and it's sad that Brent can't be here with us to discuss this, but we got to see a little bit of a segment where they set it up. Look, we've had showmances, there were power duos, but the Misfits, they were the ultimate team in the house. First of all, I hate the name that they are the Misfits. How was Paul the misfit of anything in this house, Taryn?
No, it's all about branding. If you're the opposite of a misfit, you should label yourself as a misfit, because it'll help you fit in with the people that you should be taking to the end, who are probably the misfits.
Right. At no point this season was Paul the underdog, but he's basically branded himself as the outcast, Mike.
Well, I mean, I guess if we're going to the literal definition of misfit, it's something that doesn't fit. Paul is a vet among a house of newbies. I guess that inherently does not make him fit. But like Taryn said, it's weird, like cyclical logic in that he's fitting in, so therefore he can't be a misfit.
It's boys. trust me. Maybe on it was that. In reference. Patent pending.
Maybe it's in reference to like those big shirts that he wears that are like misfit.
Yeah. This is a misfitting shirt. Trust
well,
me on
I,
that.
But I thought the one that was flirting with Paul was called Misfit.
Yes. Yes. All right. So there, we set this up. Day 68. You guys sleep together like a married couple is what Josh says. But we end up getting the clip on the show that we've been talking about on the podcast where Christmas basically comes out and admits her love for Paul. I'm going to play the clip, and then, Taryn, I want to get your reaction to this.
Christmas, you're...
Oh, this is Paul talking about Christmas and kind of demonstrating that he's not in love with her first.
Christmas, you're the coolest girl ever. You have about as many tattoos as I have and equally as crazy.
Christmas, you're the coolest girl ever. You have basically as many tattoos as me. And and this is not the reaction that Christmas wants to hear, right, Taryn?
No.
This is like Christmas, you're so cool. You're kind of like me, and I'm the coolest, so that makes you really cool. But yeah, Christmas is like, no, I'm not. I'm actually a somebody else. I'm a woman, actually.
Yeah, this feels like the subtitle to he's just not that into you. He's just not that into you. You have a lot of tattoos like I do, and you're just as crazy as me.
Yeah. This is what Paul would write in his Big Brother yearbook to Christmas. Of Christmas, this was so much fun being in the house with you this summer. You're totally cool chick, and we have so many tattoos. Can't wait to see you at Hearts of Reality. Oh wait, no, I won't ever go there. Okay. That was basically his goodbye message.
Yeah
see you
pretty
later.
Much
see you later.
I'm like, he this was particularly interesting because Paul does have a girlfriend at home, and I think this is a large part of why he's doing everything he can to, when he's talking about Christmas, make sure he's saying she's a cool girl.
That's it.
But that's it.
Okay. But Christmas has some feelings for Paul, which were aired on national television tonight.
I'm just not normally in a position where my heart gets away from me. I feel like it's getting away from me. Oh, I'm gonna come out of here and discover whether or not my heart is broken or healed.
I am so upside down right now.
Okay. Boy.
Special appearance by John Mayer on guitar there.
She's gonna come out of this house, and her feelings have gotten away from her, Taryn, and she doesn't know if she's going to have her heart broken or be able to have something going on with Paul. Now, Taryn, when we originally talked about this, that you had said that you felt like that the clip was edited out of context. Did you feel like that this was also edited out of context?
Well, I mean, first, I feel like we have to make sure that we know what we're talking about here. Are we sure that she wasn't auditioning for Degrassi?
Wrong.
I'm pretty sure.
I think the people on Big Brother Canada have a better chance of getting on Degrassi than the people on Big Brother US.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But yeah, I did. I felt like the editors, they went on Twitter and they were like, oh, this is well put together. Why don't we just take this? Because, this was basically what we saw passed around on the internet, which, again, it was edited together in a way that certainly made it seem a lot more damning in terms of her talking about Paul instead of her ex and all of that stuff. But, you know, again, they're throwing this into the fire. Paul having a girlfriend, Christmas being taken out of context and all.
So you feel like that the show is being somewhat reckless with the construction of this story, Taryn?
I wouldn't say reckless. I think
I'm not saying you're wrong, because God knows, you know, you follow this stuff extremely closely. So I'm counting on your expert opinion here.
No, I think Christmas has given them the material to work with. And so what they put together is totally above board here. I think, I do think she has feelings for Paul. And I do think that, you know, Paul himself has expressed worry that, his girlfriend is going to be a little weirded out by this, when he gets out of the house. So, yeah, I would say this is about, fair.
Is this a smoking gun for you, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's less of a matter of how long will Paulmas last. The answer is when Paul escapes the confines of the pit in her basement. That's how long Paulmas will last.
Wow, this is going to be like a reverse misery where the person with the broken leg is going to keep the other person captive?
Just talk about the cock-a-doody friendship. Featuring Derek Levasseur as the cop.
Right. When I go to the finale, that in all seriousness, my first question for Christmas will be, are you in love with Paul? Yes or no?
Yeah.
She's going to be like, no.
Do you want me to follow up the next day on the interview with saying, are you sure you're not in love with Paul? We'll give him the old 1-2 exit interviews.
Yes. Yes. And then second question, Paul, did you know Christmas is in love with you? Okay, that's what I mean. Yeah. We gotta get to the bottom of this.
Brent would have no other way here.
Yeah, no further questions, Your Honor.
I did notice that we did get the rare showing of the eclipse segment when they went to go watch the eclipse. That was one of the various times we saw Paul and Christmas kind of flirt with each other a little bit. So I'm happy that they acknowledge that, you know, once in a lifetime event that also occurred in the Big Brother house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they didn't make a segment of it on the show. All right, so we went from that fomance potentially to talk about the longest running showmance in the house, or at least the showmance that went furthest in the game, not counting Paul and Christmas. And we had this bizarre segment of Matt and Raven fighting in the kitchen with the cereal. I mean, this was bizarre, Mike.
This sounds like a horrible Clue parody. Matt and Raven in the kitchen with the cereal.
Yeah. I mean, Taryn, is this foreplay for Matt? Is this sort of like he's some sort of like kinky cereal fetish that he has? Homie, first I gotta take the milk, pour it on you, and then get the cinnamon, get it all over you.
I think that's about right. Now, I think Raven has more to do with it, to be honest. But I think Raven introduced this idea, and he was like, "Hold on. I know you're really into cinnamon, but what about some cereal?
stay crunchy. Come on, stay crunchy. Stay crunchy.
No, oh, yeah.
All right.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, more cereal.
Was the milk on that, homie?
I think this is like live jury house footage. Like, I'm assuming they're bumming around the kitchen being like, the milk's been gone for weeks. I feel like every time we get a new carton, it just disappears. I'm hearing wild screams of Captain Crunch and they're great from Matt and Raven's room. What's going on here?
Yeah. 50 Shades of Grey does not just apply to Matt's beard.
I could just imagine like 50 Shades of Grey Matt being like, I have a secret. And he opens up the room and it's like a pantry full of cereal boxes.
Cereal closet. But it got like really nasty between them. Like, I don't know. Is this dirty talk? I mean, why did he say this to her?
Go ahead.
Don't have it. I've already had it.
I already have it all over me. I don't care.
It's not wet.
Back up, clown.
Back up, clown? I mean, Mike, that's exactly what the Zingbot said to her.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe that's sort of is like he saw she got riled up by the Zingbot comment. Maybe he likes to see her a little flustered. So he thought like, all right, let me try negging in addition to pouring milk all over her. The old milk and neg.
Matt is just the master of naming people. Guy, homie, clown. He's just he's full
yeah,
of
wait, which yeah. What do you think is the worst insult, simple or clown for Raven? I think she did more umbrage with simple than she did clown.
You little punk!
Yeah. I mean, and what a mess. I mean, he poured the gallon of milk on her head, and then she was throwing cinnamon. Do you know how hard it is to clean up cinnamon?
Yeah, I think they need a new cinnamon challenge for YouTube. It's watch Matt and Raven for as long as you can throw cinnamon at each other. That's the challenge.
And then Taryn, he said to her, oh, did you get it in your wig?
Yeah. That was the real killer there. I think that was the worst one.
Very Gumpy.
Does she wear a wig, Taryn?
She wears hair extensions. I don't know. I'm not qualified to judge whether that is a wig or not.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole segment was bizarre. In terms of that. So then we went back to Kevin, one of the many Kevin segments tonight. And they talked about how smooth he is. And is Kevin in the mafia or not? He tells a story, Mike, about a gunfight at the Knights of Columbus. Are we buying this or is this
fake news?
Well, first, I want to sort of correct Matt. I don't believe the Knights of Columbus is a church. So I'm not sure what yeah. Matt was thinking about, but this is a confusing segment for me just because when you heard Kevin first talking about like how when mafia members tend to kiss and hug each other, it means they're making a hit. I misheard him, and I thought I heard if the mobsters were wearing Huggies, nope. That means that there's some sort of hit going out. So I'm not sure if Kevin was talking about diapers at one point and they thought like, oh, it's so scary that they're going to crap their pants from dying.
Yeah,
so that was my night.
That episode of The Sopranos. Your Knights of Columbus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Taryn, you buying the gunfight at the Knights of Columbus?
Yeah, I buy it. I'm into it.
Okay.
I completely believe everything that Kevin says. I think he has lived a very full life. And if he says he was in a gunfight, don't question Kevin when he's around.
How does Kevin compare to Philip Shepherd in terms of nicknames? Taryn, I don't remember that many nicknames going out on the live feeds for Kevin's crew.
Yeah, the nickname thing was not exactly something that was very prevalent.
Right.
Yeah.
So
just like the Mojos and the HOV didn't stick around too long.
Yeah, Kevin got too depressed to keep it going. So really terrible nicknames, actually, considering that his nickname for Matt was the Professor, Mike.
The most interesting character on Gilligan's Island, that's the character you give him. Yeah, it's a weird one. And I don't know how I feel about Terminator X. As someone who went by the name Mr. X, I don't know how I feel about being related to Alex and the X family.
Yeah, Terminator X, Taryn.
Yeah. She's a Terminator, and she's certainly an X.
Yeah, I guess so. There's an X in Alex.
Yeah, exactly. He was just trying to spell out her name, and he got a little.
I'm grateful for when the shoe becomes the Sarah Connor to Terminator X coming up in Big Brother 21.
So we also got to see the segment about catching the rat, Taryn. This is something that we saw take place on the live feed, but we actually got to see the rat. How does a rat get in the Big Brother house?
Oh, there are many avenues. The ants work very hard all season long to burrow holes big enough to get their cavalry in. They really try to take over that house.
The easiest way to get
year.
A rat okay. in the Big Brother house is just have them win Big Brother 15, right?
Oh, come on. We just had Andy
on last night.
Andy
was a fantastic guest. I love him. Just a throwback to 2013, a much simpler time.
So, we... Christmas was just doubled over laughing that there's nothing that Paul could have done to set this trap that Christmas would not have thought was funny.
It's like
so adorable.
It's like Elmer Fudd realness going on. He had like the cartoon spatula propped up against this heavy pot. I don't know what they were thinking was going to happen, but this is, I don't know. How does this compare to like the Big Brother 16 Team America task where Frankie and Derek kept the house up all night looking for the rat?
Yeah. Well, this, at least there was an actual rat, and so that I preferred this.
Yeah, I mean, there was actual stuff going on. They were very proud of their trap. I did like the quick edit of Josh being cut off in the diary room. Mm-hmm. And like, now that we set up our trap, I'm not scared of
Yeah. Now, Mike, is this a good look for Big Brother to air footage on television that, you know, they sort of like try to hype up the Big Brother place as like, wow, this amazing house that we get to live there all summer, which has a rat problem?
I don't know, Rob. I don't know what you're talking about. I think the idea to market a show that's going to bring in a bunch of millionaires and billionaires into the house in about 3 months and market that it's festooned with vermin and cinnamon and milk all over the place, I think that is the pitch-perfect way to market this location. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, that the Big Brother house is going to have more one-star reviews on Yelp than Christmas's book. All right, so let's go in a very Borneo-esque transition. Let's go from rats to snakes. And we checked back in with Dominique, who we saw a reset of her big fight with Paul. And Taryn, I do have to say, looking back, that you know, Dominique did have it mostly right.
Yeah, she did. And we said this at the time, too. We're like, she's completely right in everything that she's saying, but she's talking in riddles. Mm-hmm. So nobody understands it. And they think that she's a nutcase. Picked out like the good things that she was saying to like throw this back and be like, look, wow, look how right Dominique was. They came for me. I guarantee you they're coming for you next. Pointing right at Elena and Mark. And guess who's sitting in the jury house right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see on Wednesday night how much Dominique is sort of like pounding her chest. Basically like, I called it. I told you Paul was the snake. He was a slithering snake with snake tendencies.
It's not going to come out like that, Rob. Take that sentence, add about 80 words to it, throw in a bunch of, I don't know, like Asian Grecian metaphors into it, and you have Dominique's true answer to Julie's question of, hey, you caught Paul on early. What would have happened if you stayed
right
in the house?
She's not great for a live reunion show, but they do have 2 hours, Mike.
That's true. They're not going to do like the presidential debates lights of like once it turns to yellow, you have about 15 seconds left for your response and then it turns red.
No, they're going to let Dominique have a whole segment in the 2 hour finale. They might need to bring Megan back for the 2 hour finale to fill some time.
I like this. Dominique spoken word about the season with Raven dancing backup. I feel like we really can make a meal out of this.
No, in all seriousness, Taryn, with this 2 hour finale, like Big Brother Canada in the past has done 2 hour finales, but they do a lot of like montages in the Big Brother Canada finale. I know that they also do the awards, but do you think that they'll go back to more montages in the Big Brother US finale after a night of montages tonight?
I wouldn't guess so. I mean, that's not usually their thing in the finale. I'm guessing a lot of it's going to be the final HOH. Probably we're going to get some more jury stuff, like a lot of jury stuff. I know they really cleared out last episode for lots of jury house stuff. So they probably have a lot of that to go around. So it's probably just going to be a lot of that. And then they really drag it out. When they do the votes and then they talk to them and we really just want to see a reunion, but instead we get like this lackluster questioning.
Well, I'm trying to remember last season if they even spent much time with the pre-jury. I don't really think that they've done that. Maybe they'll do a little bit more there, but I don't know who necessarily from the pre-jury that they're dying to talk to outside of Jess.
I think that my Cameron for America's Favorite Player campaign is working. They're getting a ton of votes for Cameron. And so they're like, man, we got to include him in this episode. We got to give him lots of screen time on the finale. Cameron, he's so popular. I don't know what happened.
Yes, Cameron's truly the Ross Perot of Big Brother 19, America's Favorite Player.
He's coming in. Tara, could you tell us a little bit about what you're trying to do for Cameron for America's Favorite Player?
Obviously, like, I'm never one to really campaign, but I figured, you know, if you're going to give it to somebody, you know, people want to send a message to the house guests. Let's give it to Cody. Let's give it to Kevin to prove that we like these people. I say send a message to production. Tell them that we don't like night one evictions and we don't like vets replacing people and having them come into the house. So give it to Cameron. Cameron's not going to win. Of course he's not going to win. But if we get him in the top three, that's a strong message.
I think that you're potentially helping out Cameron maybe get back in the mix for some sort of like a future all-star season. But I'm not sure necessarily Cameron getting into the top three of America's Favorite Player is going to make that people will make the leap of, oh, people voted for Cameron because they didn't like that we put a veteran into the house. And this was a protest vote against that.
I mean, listen, Rob, nothing is ever going to get through to them, but all we can do is try. And hey, if Cameron gets to come back after leaving night one, even if you're not a fan of him, that's something too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that would be nice to see Cameron ultimately get to that point. And hopefully he will get a question and maybe even an opportunity to strip on the live finale. Give him a segment for that,
with,
Mike.
With the Raven dancing and the Nabonik poetry, I think we have a real case here for a musical performance live on the Big Brother stage.
Yeah. We had a whole reset of the Mark versus Josh fight. Nothing new there. We also had a really hard sell for, you know, this summer, all of the craziest moments that happened were because of the Den of Temptation and a reset, Mike, of all things Den of Temptation.
I mean, I guess it was interesting to remember the Temptations and how 67% of them were kind of bungled by the people that used them, or at least arguably misused a little improperly. This has just been, you could definitely feel the weight of the 90 days this season in both its good and its bad tendencies. And yeah, it's interesting to realize the pendant of protection, which you guys talked about like 10 weeks ago at this point, which is ridiculous to think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we actually got a through line on the Ring of Replacement, which, you know, was impactful in terms of screwing over Cody. So we also got the Halting Hex reset, Taryn.
Yes, very, very important there. They were like, oh, man, this was so game-changing, leaving out the fact that they just went out the next 2 weeks after.
Yeah, changed everything. So we also then went back to the final three, who said, you know, in that diary room, so many crazy things happened, and we went to the montage of, you know, everybody, like, waking up, and then a lot of crying. One thing I did notice, Taryn, that we had not seen all season long, you know, there were all these words on the screen, and I forget who it was that sort of, like, laid down or put their head down, and there was a word on the diary room that had been obfuscated the entire summer, and I didn't realize it was there, but I think it's important. Did you catch that the word friendship is written on the wall in the diary room?
Yeah, it's right there, and not only is friendship there, but right next to it is alliance.
Wow, subliminal. I mean, Mike, that, you know, we've really been killing these house guests all summer long, but when they bring this guy, Paul, back, and he gives out friendship bracelets, and then you go into the diary room, and alongside the words like alliance, HOH, all these Big Brother terms, veto, there is the word friendship. It's like that's part of the game.
Yeah, it's a little bit like In the Mole when Anderson Cooper used to say, like, hey, stay tuned. We put some clues in there for you viewers to figure out who the mole was, except they're doing that to the players in the house.
I mean,
as the season
occurs.
Why
not have Paul as one of the words that's on the wall in there? It's the same thing.
I'm surprised
thing.
There's not like four words listed vertically with spelling out an acronym to Paul.
Yeah. Rachel in the chat says next year Gumpy will be in there also.
And boys.
Boys, Gumpy, boys, Paul. Dead skull. Yeah, all the different Paul words that you could put in there. So
yeah, well, they're gonna have Paul at this point has had the longest number of days in the house, right? I feel like they need to dedicate a room to him. We need the Paul pad next season in the Big Brother house to the player who's lasted the longest in the house sequentially.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Paul is really just lucky that they took down the advice that he gave future house guests at the end of last season, because that would have really messed up his game.
Yeah, what was the future? What was the advice he left in the OTT house?
Like, don't listen to anybody else. Don't let people tell you what to do. You know, be yourself. You know, don't be a lemming or whatever. You know,
yeah, not good.
Friendship.
Not good. So then we got to see the final three, like, act like they really, really all wanted to win the game, and then talk about how that they were going to duke it out for the $500,000. Paul said, like, a weird, like, may the best man or woman. Wait, I don't know why he needed to have that weird affect on the word woman, Mike.
It's like he'd never said it before.
I mean, again, his main catchphrase is boys. I'm assuming it's sort of like a gender all-inclusive noun, but maybe he needed to emphasize it here. And yes, they're going to duke it out with Unicorn Dookie, it seems like.
Right. Mike, what was your reaction to the final three endurance battle of the hold on to your life to the farting unicorn? Spills the glitter like the farting unicorn.
This feels like the Squatty Potty commercial come to life in the Big Brother house. I mean, I don't know. There was the feline torture that we had last time with them having to like dunk themselves in milk, which is probably got Matt a little riled up if he would have gone through it, and then throw themselves onto a big wall. And I didn't know how they would be able to one up that. And now they have animals literally farting in their face for hours at a time. It's fantastic. I love it.
Mike loved it.
Absolutely. These are some of the things I love about Big Brother are just the absolute zaniness that can occur. I know it's not for everybody, but there are some supremely ridiculous things that go on in the Big Brother house. I'm a fan of supremely ridiculous things. These final three HOH competitions have slowly but surely become just insane, like Lisa Frank come to life, Cronenberg-esque fantasies, and this is a representation of it. I love it.
Taryn, for comparison, I'm sure a lot of our U.S. viewers did not follow what was happening in Big Brother Canada. Could you compare the final few challenges from Big Brother Canada and the production design that went into those versus the glitter farting unicorn?
Well, the Big Brother Canada 5 theme was the Odyssey. It was a sci-fi theme. They had these huge, elaborate, like, sci-fi sets. They were beautiful. It was amazing. Big Brother 19 had the Temptation theme. So, obviously, unicorns farting in people's faces makes complete sense. We know that Trevor Boris, who is one of the big guns at Big Brother Canada, was consulting, I believe, on the competitions last year. I don't know if he was doing it this year, but I feel like he really set them on a path. He was like, listen, people like Mike Bloom, they love the goofy stuff. You should just keep going with the goofy stuff. And then he snuck back over to Canada and was like, let's really show them up. It was all a setup. He's playing Big Brother.
I'm a very coveted market share.
Yeah. And for all the talk of getting down to the final three, there's no way Christmas can compete in the final three competitions and all the research that was done of previous final three competitions. I mean, here was Christmas standing there on the farting unicorn.
Well, yeah, all season long, Brent was like, she will never be able to compete in these competitions. This is nonsense that she's playing in this game. And here she is.
To be fair, she's not standing on it. She's standing behind the farting unicorn, which from a logistics perspective, I don't know. If I'm I forget the name of the chariot rider in the constellation that's supposed to be like roping in the stallions, but like you figure if they're gassy
Orion?
After... Yeah, it might be Orion, but like you figure like that episode of Seinfeld when Kramer was feeding the beans to his horse and carriage. Like
Rusty!
After a while, you'd say like, yeah, maybe I'm going to put in my 2 weeks. This job is not worth the squeeze.
Yes, I hope that nobody fed the unicorn Beefarino. That's the one thing that we have to hope for, that the unicorn did not eat slop or anything like that.
Didn't have that damn good steak.
Yeah, the effects could be deadly. And that's where we leave it for the live show, and then we'll talk about the results of that when we get to the live feed. So let's take some questions from you guys, and of course why don't we start things off with Jeremy, who says, what makes for a better BB19, omitting Paul altogether or simply omitting his pendant of protection? Taryn, let's just talk that through, because I don't know if we've really discussed that recently. If Paul did not have a pendant of protection, Cody puts him on the block week one. Does he go out week one?
Obviously, it's impossible to say for sure, but I think evidence points to the fact that he would have stayed. Obviously, Christmas ended up staying. He has all the same votes that Christmas did. Unless something drastic changes, we have to assume that he probably would have stayed.
Yeah. I think if Paul can get himself off of the block week one, though, I think that people end up with a better taste in their mouth, and we're not even talking about standing behind a magical unicorn, Mike.
Yes. No. No Beefarino with the pendant of protection. But on the other hand, you've got this really interesting moment. I mean, again, I can't say enough how much week one was just insane television, for in all sense of the word, between the five nominations that happened and a blindside for like a good quarter of the house come eviction night, that it did lead to this moment at the veto meeting when Cody said, Paul, go up on the block, and you have this rare moment where Paul says, no, I can't. Here's this thing to get me out of it. So if you miss out on the pendant of protection, you miss out on that moment and you get similar results. So I feel like, you know, the pendant of protection was sort of a nice piece of jewelry to sort of give to the status that Paul already had.
Okay, let's take this question from, let's see, do we have another question after Jeremy? We might be stuck. Okay, if we are, then we should go to the live feeds. Not sure how many people are going to bounce out and want to be pure going into Wednesday night. But if that is the case, then of course, we will have our live coverage starting with Taryn and the expert panel coming up. I'm assuming that Brent will be with you as well on finale night, right?
Yes. Okay. We'll be there.
All right. So Taryn and Brent, and we'll see what else we put together for finale night. I will have the interviews with the cast following the show, and then let's get into talking about how this all played out on the feeds here as we talk some spoilers.
The Office of Civil Defense has issued the following message. This is
a spoiler
warning.
A spoiler
warning means that an actual
spoiler
against this country has been detected and that protective action should be taken.
That was my attempt at the Ramses dance.
Yes. Well done, Mike. Okay. So, Taryn, okay, tell us about the farting unicorns.
Yes. So, Paul has the strongest stomach for unicorn farts, and he was in fact able to survive this the longest. And Paul wins part one of the final.
Sounds like a bias competition for potty mouth standing behind taking farts in.
Yeah. Okay, so congratulations to Paul, the winner of part one of the HOH. But Taryn, Paul has been thinking about what he wants to do for the rest of these parts, and in true Paul fashion, never one to leave well enough alone.
Yeah, well, he certainly wants Josh to win the second part. He is very concerned about Christmas winning the next HOH. So he's doing his best to get Josh the win for part two. He really wants Josh.
Okay. So that could potentially spell trouble for Paul here going into the final three, Mike, if Josh can win that final three competition. How do you handicap this, Mike?
I mean, it's tough because as you guys have been saying, I mean, first of all, I don't know if we should put handicap and Christmas in the same thought here. But I think that you guys have been talking about how part three of Final HOH is really tough because it's essentially saying, hey, we videotaped these jurors answering a question without your knowledge, without knowing what the question would be. Figure it out. And, you know, we've sort of also been seeing that Paul has his own words that he hopes people are thinking when he sends people to the jury. He might not necessarily know that people are thinking different things once they get to the jury. But that being said, I don't know if Josh is going to fare much better. I mean, I guess due to experience and the fact that Paul has, once again, experienced not only this competition, but he has won it. I'm going to put it probably like 75-25 Paul.
75-25 Paul. Taryn, are you buying or selling the over-under of 75% for Paul?
You know, it's pretty much a crapshoot, but I would give an edge to Paul here. I would go maybe a little less than 70%, in terms of Paul winning the competition. You actually, you brought up, you sparked an idea in my head. I don't know why nobody has tried this before, that like, if Paul's sending people to jury house, he should be like whispering in their ear, when they ask you the question, say something specific, like say something that I can recognize so that I can get these questions right in the final three part, of the HOH. Why has nobody
say
done
Trejo
this
before? Mm-hmm. Your answer. That's how I'll know.
Right.
Yeah. Or like you say something that starts with the letter A, like, it's, you know, it's there's plenty of options.
Right. Or one word answer. That might be something that you could do. So maybe Taryn, you could be the Kevin Martin of US Big Brother and game the system.
There we go. Okay. Here we go.
We'll see.
I aspire to be Kevin Martin.
And then you could just do the live feed updates on the live feeds. That would be very convenient for everybody. Just tell us everything that happened, the next day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Big Brother 20 live feed update straight from the APSR.
Why do they call it the Austin Powers room, that room?
Because I believe there's a scene in Austin Powers where there's some sort of similar looking lounging area where it's like very corny and they do things in there.
Mike?
I'm very adept in the Austin Powers canon. I do see some similar moments in there. It could have been like the scene in Austin Powers.
The plane? The Austin
Powers
plane?
Yes, I'm just thinking the circular bed when he's making various poses on it when attempting to come onto Vanessa Kensington in the very first film. Ironically enough, we had talk about Mojo from one contestant, but he spent very little time in the Austin Powers sex room.
Yeah, okay. We'll see. Well, somebody needs to do a side-by-side comparison of that room and Austin Powers to see if what it ultimately is or isn't. Okay, let's go back and take some of these quests. And then nothing else is going on, right, Taryn?
Well, actually, I mentioned this earlier today that it seemed as though Paul was talking to Josh a lot about, man, we really cannot beat Christmas. Paul believes this because this is what Kevin told him. This is what Alex told him. He's saying to Josh, we cannot beat Christmas. We need to win this thing. And he's genuine when he does it. And it seemed like it was starting to maybe sink in with Josh. I was saying there's a chance here that maybe Josh ends up taking Paul after all the talk about cutting him. And he actually was talking to the cameras earlier today saying, I don't know what to do. Christmas, she's played a much cleaner game than me. She hasn't made people mad. Maybe people will be mad at Paul. Maybe he is my best shot here. So for as long as we've been looking forward to Josh potentially cutting Paul at the end, he is now at the last second considering maybe I should take him.
Hmm. Yeah, that's not going to be good for anybody, Mike.
No, I mean, I would say that might be on par with Cody's move in Big Brother 16, but we also have somebody on the panel who does not think it was that bad of a move, so I don't know if we're preaching to the choir here.
Yeah.
This is just like the Brent saying, I don't think Christmas has feelings for Josh thing. It was a bad move, just wasn't the worst.
Wasn't the worst. Yeah, I really think that Josh is going to be very upset when he gets out of the house, especially if he does, like, that could be the one thing that sort of ends up redeeming him online in terms of the Big Brother fans. Whereas if he just takes Paul to the end and then you just played yourself, then I really think he's going to take it very hard. Like, I think he could be really down after the season, Taryn.
Yeah, I mean, I think he'll be pretty down regardless, because, again, I think even if he cuts Paul, he doesn't have a great shot at beating Christmas. And I think that, you know, he talked about it. Like, this has been my dream since I was 14. He's been thinking that he's been playing a really great game all season long. And I think the jury, they might laugh in his face when he says, guess what, guys? I've been in alliance with Paul all season long. They may respond just like they did in the jury house and be like, yeah, everyone did, idiot. And I think that's really going to hurt him.
Okay, let's go to a question from Dominic, who says, what contestants from Celebrity Apprentice would Mike Bloom want to see on Celebrity Big Brother? Okay, Mike, is there any standouts from Celebrity Apprentice that you would like to see in Celebrity Big Brother?
I've got three words for you, Rob. Vivica A. Fox.
Okay. That'd be good.
That'd be a good one. I feel like...
Trick.
Yeah, we could, if we want to put Geraldo in there as well, I feel like that could be fun, even though if Paul's making up his own catchphrases, Geraldo has his own rhyming schema that he can try to debut as well on the live feeds.
Yeah. You want I and Z airing?
No, because he's going to sing, and that's they're going to cut off the feeds, right? You can't sing copyrighted songs.
That's right. Well, I don't think like Cucaracha is a copyrighted song.
We had this debate 2 years ago, Rob.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's take this question. This is a visual question. This is Jessica Lewis says, I would watch this Big Brother 19 jury video of Raven explaining how she was the puppet master over and over and over again. Yeah, that's something to look forward to on finale night of Raven coming back into the real world.
Hey, I think people are really underestimating Raven here. I think that when she's talking about, like, look, I was a puppet master. I was pulling tons of strings. People are laughing. Like, what kind of strings did you pull? I think she's talking about man, everyone really bought all of these diseases and illnesses. Yeah, exactly. She's like, man, I really pulled one over on them. We're thinking she's talking about the game, but I think she might be talking about something else.
It was America's heartstrings, y'all.
I thought she meant hamstrings. She was doing too many kicks outside of the Big Brother house.
I've got rough hamstring syndrome, too. I pulled my hamstrings all season.
Don't worry. Some milk will help with that. Yeah, rub it in. Rub it in. Yeah. Call me Toucan Sam.
Stick to your core values.
Okay, Joe Daly was there. It's impossible Matt thought the real game started once you got to the jury house. I mean, it doesn't seem like he's doing anything in the jury house either.
Well,
what are you saying, guy?
I'm not your guy, buddy.
You're a punk!
Well, I think somebody pointed out, I think I saw this on Reddit, where like somebody mentioned to Cody last night of like when Cody decided to walk away from all this when he first arrived, being like, you got to play the game. What are you doing, homie? You got to play the game. So it does bring up this question of, does Matt think that the actual game was making it to jury? And that was why he was so adamant about making jury, because that's when the game begins once he's voted out and lives in another house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do feel like that this cast, when they come out of the house, I mean, it really is going to be bizarre for them, because I do not think that they will get a warm welcome on social media. That I feel like that Josh might, Paul certainly, you know, has a fan base that is existing, and people who followed Christmas on social media will, you know, continue to follow her already. I'm not sure if she won over any new fans from Big Brother, but you know, if like the Mats and the Ravens and the Alexes of the world, like, I feel like it's going to be a rough entry for them into the world of social media, Taryn.
Well, we know Matt won't mind. He'll just be like, oh man, all the cereal, I've been waiting so long.
Cereal endorsement.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I obviously agree. I think this cast is not going to come out to a kind reception. But yeah, I think I don't think Matt will mind. I think he'll comfort himself with lots of cereal.
Okay, will you offer Alex a spot to redeem herself on the Taryn show, Taryn?
No. I'll offer her the spot, and she'll be like, I think I have to give my spot to Paul. I really think that's the best move for my game. I've got to give it up to Paul. I'm sorry.
Can I just talk to you about Kevin?
I gotta go. I got a biology test in 5 minutes, and I didn't study.
See, I'll never get invited to Thanksgiving if I have Alex on the podcast.
Yeah. Okay. This is from Dave Coca, who says, how scripted did the dialogue sound between the final three going through what's happened all this season? Yeah, this was not great. This was not great. Anybody doing the, you know, just the if, I don't know how they could improve this, Mike, but it is not very natural.
I will say what made up for it is I think Josh had probably the combined energy of all of the previous final threes all in one. He was radiant. He was jumping up and down in his seat the entire time over the course of their dinner. He was elated to be in the final three. Yeah.
Josh, you were so scared of the rat. Oh my God, I was scared of the rat.
Yeah. And we're not talking about Kevin. Okay. Stephanie says, was this some sort of weird Matt fetish who was trying to turn Raven to bowl of cereal by pouring milk on her? Yes, I agree. I think this
locked
was
onto something there.
I think you're onto something. That's right.
Paul is my buddy buddy.
Yes. So is the cereal. Okay. Stacked in FL says, what was Mike Bloom's favorite exit interview this season? What was the most cringeworthy? Mike, did you have one favorite interview from the Big Brother cast?
Oh, that's really tough because, again, say what you want to about the cast, but I thought there were some really fun answers to things. I mean, I got to go back to my very first Cody interview where I asked him about Paul, and he goes into an entire monologue, which was very surprising for Cody. I honestly thought I'd get like maybe 40 words out of him total. And he goes into this entire rant about how, you know, they're only doing this for Paul because of his followers. He's going to win the game. This is ridiculous. They're leading them along. Then I follow up with asking him like, hey, you know, you didn't really show your emotions around the house. Do you think that might have impacted the way you were able to connect with house guests? And he just replied with no.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very proud of myself that, you know, in my nascent career, career as an exit interviewer, I was able to get a textbook Cody answer out of him. That's still probably the most proud I've been as an interviewer so far. I've had a lot of really fun moments in the season so far, but that's definitely the tip top for me.
Okay. All right. Well, we will leave it here tonight. Of course, Taryn, what's the weekend look like on the live feed recaps?
We will be back noon Eastern on Saturday. I will be live with Liana to update you on all the nothing that's happening on the feed. So it'll be very fun. We do have some special updates coming for you on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. We're going to be running through the final three and their games across the entire season. We're going to do one player per day. So that'll be a lot of fun. Make sure you tune into those last few. And we'll, of course, keep you updated if anything happens on the feeds as well.
Okay. One more Liana Saturday for the Big Brother season. Of course, Amazing Race Canada has its season finale recap. Mike, was this a good season of Amazing Race Canada?
I enjoyed it. I would say it wasn't particularly my favorite, but there was still a lot of fun stuff in it. I mean, Amazing Race Canada is something that I always really enjoy, the casting in particular, and Jess and Dan have done a fantastic job with their coverage as always.
Okay, of course, Nick Yadanza has the exit interviews from the week in Australian Survivor. You can check those out on the Wrap Up feed. And then, what's this? Has the halting hex been taken away, Taryn?
Hopefully so. It should be out tonight. My interview with Netta Kalantar. If it's not out tonight, then I don't know what to do. So I'll get you something else instead. But hopefully this will be out tonight. I've been told that's what we're doing. So check your feeds tonight, early tomorrow morning, whenever you want to look. It should be there. I'm very excited for you guys to listen to it.
Okay. Okay. Well, happy to hear that the rare technical difficulties of getting that one specific podcast out in the world have been resolved.
Yes, the Netta patch has gone through, so I think he's ready to reboot now.
Okay, of course. Yeah. You can subscribe to The Taryn Show. Go to robinswebsite.com/Taryn Show. And then the next live update is coming. What's the time on that? Noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific?
Yes, that's the time on the weekends, but we'll be back to 10 a.m. on the weekdays. So Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday will be 10 a.m. Saturday and Sunday will be noon.
Okay, and then finale night, Wednesday, coming up 10:15 Eastern, 7:15 Pacific. Don't miss our live coverage of the Big Brother 19 finale when someone with a beard will win Big Brother 19. So be on the lookout for that. And then we will see. We'll find out, then get to the bottom of is Christmas in love with Paul? Okay? All right. Mike Bloom, great stuff. Mike Bloom, what have you been working on?
So you can always find me on The Hamster Factor. I'm doing a movie podcast with AJ Mass, where he has seen a movie and I have not. We're sort of comparing our thoughts there. We spoke of Australian Survivor. I'm actually going to be on next week's Australian Survivor Know It All's recap with Nick Yadanza, talking through the three episodes of Merge that we have in this really fantastic Australian Survivor season. Of course, you can always follow me on Parade, where, as Rob said, I'm finishing up Big Brother 19 exit interviews. And I do want to take this time to also thank everyone out there who has been reading my interviews all season long. This is my first like full season doing exit interviews, and I was a little bit of a daunting task at first, but I'm really happy with how everything came out. So thank you all for subscribing to that. I'll be doing Survivor, segueing into season 35, and I know that I plugged something earlier when I was on the podcast with you, Rob, about recurring Survivor coverage. Am I at liberty to announce it officially here, or are we still keeping it under wraps?
Let's still keep it under wraps for a few more days. But next
what
week we'll have an announcement.
I'm gonna tease it. I'm like, this is the Netta Show of podcasts.
I just need to think about it one more time.
Okay. Great, yes.
All right. All right. Well, great stuff tonight. Do we have a hashtag? Final two shoe.
I saw reverse misery.
Reverse misery as well. Yeah.
Yes. If you stay away from cereal fetish, I feel like
a shoe will be able to beat you.
Oh boy. Yeah.
All right. Great stuff. Thanks so much to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.